Maybe you know well Romans chapter 7. It is the passage that I refer to a lot for myself, because it is a passage about a man whom most every one of us would consider to be, if we rate people in the Bible, he would probably rate as one of those super Christians. But then I find in Romans 7 that Paul says, the things that I do, I don't want to do. And the things that I don't want to do, that's what I do. I like to read how that Paul would make that statement. And then he would go on to say, starting in verse 22, I find then another law, that I love the law of God according to the inner man. But I find another law at war in my members, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my flesh. And then he made this statement, oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death? Paul is just like the rest of us. He was at war too. He was fighting his battle as well. And everywhere he turned and everything he did, he was facing the same enemy that mankind has faced since almost the beginning of time. And since we all are in this battle together, we need not only to understand that the battle belongs to the Lord, which is your topic that you wanted to discuss this week, but for tonight, we need to understand a little better what resources Satan has at his disposal in order to tempt us. Let us first notice a couple of things. Paul used this phrase, oh, wretched man that I am. The point is, he knew that he was sin-filled. He knew that he had problems. He knew what his weaknesses were. He knew himself. And every one of us is the same way. We're here in this room tonight, and every one of us knows down deep that we're not as good as we appear to be. We're not. And we all know it. And furthermore, I don't want to display my warts. And you don't either. And so like Paul, we can say about ourselves, oh, wretched one that I am, who can deliver me? And when we talk about Satan's resources, let us first give some positive information. Satan's power over us is not absolute. In Job 1 and 2, when Satan wanted to do something bad to Job to prove to God that Job wasn't as good as he said he was, it is not by chance that God reveals to us in that story that the devil had to ask permission. Now that will help us a little bit. He does not have free run. He does not have carte blanche with my life. He had to ask for permission. On another occasion, Jesus looked at Peter and he said, Peter, I pray for you because the devil, Satan, desires to sift you like wheat. But I pray for you that you will not fall. Not only does Satan have to ask permission, but apparently Jesus prays for us. Apparently, he is concerned about us. Apparently, he wants us not to fail. And therefore, Satan goes through him to get permission to operate, but never given permission to do more than I can handle. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. There's no temptation taken you, but that which is common to all men. God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able to bear, but will, with the temptation, make a way of escape that you might be able to bear it. And see, that helps. It also helps to know what Jesus said in John chapter 10. He said, "You are in my Father's hand. And no one can snatch you out." You can jump, but the devil does not have power to snatch me away. I give him permission, but he can't do it on his own. Therefore, we understand that the power that Satan has is not absolute. The devil does not have complete power over me. But his desire for me is absolute. Jesus put it this way, passage you know quite well. Enter in at the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. There are many who go in by it. Destruction. Satan's desire, the devil's desire, is absolutely to destroy me. There is nothing in his mind that is good for me. We've already seen that he's been defeated. Jesus has already won the battle. He's already won the war. His individual battles are still taking place in my life and yours, but the war has already been won. Satan cannot win the war. The only chance he has is to win a few battles along the line. That's all he's got. Doesn't have anything else. And so his desire is absolutely to get me. There is nothing about what he is or does that can be construed to be good. Just like there is nothing evil at all within God, there is nothing good within the devil. So whatever he is doing, even if it looks okay now, the intention is my complete and utter destruction. Therefore, I must be ready to battle the resources that he has. Ephesians chapter 6. You know the passage, but you can turn there, and we will work our way through this text in a moment. Be prepared to fight the devil. Let me tell you my favorite story of all time. My favorite story is my favorite story because it involves our twins. We moved to Richmond, Kentucky when they were 2 years old. And they had a series of shots still to get. And so the day appointed came, we went down to the health department, each of us with a child in tow and arms. And we walk into this thing and we're sitting down and it came time for shots. Now, here's how it worked in my house. I don't know if it worked that way in yours. But it worked this way. I had the child to be shot. My wife had the child not to be shot yet, way down there, so as not to hear the one shot get shot, right? So I take the one, and we go down the hall, and one of our ladies is the nurse going to give the shot. She said, have a seat right there. And we sat down, and I put our son Austin on my knee, and he began to shake. Now, he was only 2 years old. He had no clue what it was about to happen. Never been anything like that in all of his life, really. And yet he knew instinctively, this is not a good place. There is something wrong about a woman walking around in a white coat and things draped around her neck. There's something wrong about that. And so he looked at me and he said, Daddy, what do? I said, son. I grabbed his chin and I said, you just look at me while she came to get him. And as his eyes hit my eyes, the needle hit his arm. And in that split second, his life flashed in front of his face. And he's only two, so it was real short. But his eyes began to talk to me. And in that split moment, that split second, he was talking to me, and I know what he was saying. He said, Dad, you signed on to be my dad. And one of the things you promised to do when you decided to be my dad, you're going to take care of me and support me, and you're not going to hurt me. And here you done brought me to this place, and this woman has hurt me and put a needle in my arm, and it doesn't feel good. And boy, he began to cry. And we sat there. After a while, he started to calm down. But he wanted to talk. Now, you know how it is to talk after you've cried really hard? I've told this story so many times, I've learned how to do it. Here's what he did. He goes, Dad? Yes, son. Don't let him do that to Aubrey. That's what all the women do every time. And they come running up to me afterwards and say, is he single? Can he marry my daughter? Now I can say no, he's married. And two, he grew out of that. So, no problem. But now I had a problem. Don't let him do that to Aubrey. Of course, I'm thinking, she's the next one to be shot. What are you going to tell him? And I said, Austin, if we don't bring Aubrey in here for this, then she might get sick. She might have to go to the hospital. And we wouldn't have her for a while. Okay, you can do it to Aubrey. Why do we get shot? Protection. Why is it that people go and do that? Because they're protecting themselves from the advances of disease. Right now, I think it's rather humorous. My wife gets the flu shot every year. I've never had one. But it's amazing to me. Maybe you've had the same experience. Every year she gets the flu shot and immediately gets the flu. Somehow that just doesn't seem right. I thought the flu shot kept you away from the flu. And then I realized, oh, they say, no, you're supposed to get a little bit of flu, so you won't get a whole lot of flu. Well, I have a different theory. I get no flu and have not had flu so far I'm winning. Maybe it'll change. But the idea is being prepared, getting ready, putting up what you need as a defense in order to combat whatever is coming. Notice the text. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against the powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Number one. I have preached and studied and talked about this passage ever how many times. And it never occurred to me in the same way until just a while ago. It's one thing to say, yeah, you got to have this equipment on, all this armor and stuff, you need it. And we talk about it and we talk about what it stands for, and we will in a moment. But notice the point of the passage. The armor was designed for the enemy. Designed to fight the enemy. Remember the story in the Old Testament when Goliath came around? And the children of Israel were standing there, and he'd come out every day and said, send somebody out to fight me! And they were all scared. Send somebody out, whoever wins, the battle's over. And David had come, you know, little boy, and he said, why aren't you fighting? Oh, no, he's a big guy. Oh, I'll go. Fought a bear, fought a lion with my hands. I can do it. What did King Saul do? Brought him in and said, here, use my armor. I'd like to have seen that armor on him, wouldn't you? You surely had the experience of your children appearing in the living room wearing some of your clothes, the big shoes flipping around, coats hanging off the arms. And they're walking around, they are you. But it doesn't fit. Well, that armor didn't fit. And the armor that God has put together in Ephesians chapter 6 fits. Because it was designed to fight the resources that Satan has. So while we notice his resource, we notice what his intention is, and we notice the armor that battles the resource to avoid the intention. Let's look at it together. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth. Okay. What's the first weapon of Satan? Here it is. A poisoned, tipped feather. Doesn't sound very dangerous, but it is. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but having itching ears will heap up teachers for themselves and be turned away. The feather that tickles the ears has poison in its tip. I really am sad in some ways that my grandson has turned 4 and is now attempting to avoid nap time. Here's why. I have him every Thursday. Ever since he's been born, he and I spend a day a week together. Oh, when he was one and two and three, I got a nap every week. Every week, my wife would come home from school and we'd be snoring in the bed. Loved it. Turned to four. He doesn't want a nap. Now he's decided that Pops is there to play 100% of the time that he's there. We're not napping. But when we would lie down to nap, you know what he wanted? He wanted me to do this on his arms. You like it too, don't you? Yeah. You want your husband to do that? You want your wife to do that? Your children want you to do that to the back of their necks, you know? And all of a sudden, everybody in the room snoring. We're gone. That's what he's talking about, 2 Timothy 4. He's talking about a tickling that makes you like something different. But the whole time he's tickling, that poison is working its way through your skin. His intention is to spread false doctrine and girding the waist with truth keeps us from being tickled by the false doctrine. We have to be careful. Because often the false doctrine sounds really good, sounds believable, sounds possible, but what did it say? Turn you away from the truth. Satan's first weapon is to attack truth with a poison-tipped feather. Number two. Having put on the breastplate of righteousness. Some things are right, and some things are wrong. And it seems to me that as our country moves further along, there's far less difference between right and wrong. Things are becoming more gray all of the time. It just seems like more people want to say, oh, there's no right and there's no wrong. It's just not that big a deal. But right is still right. And wrong is still wrong. I don't care if the government passes a law and said, it's legal. Maybe legal, but it's not right. Satan's next defense or next weapon is a two-faced mask. He'll lie. And you'll think he's telling the truth. He'll set it up to say, oh, but this is right, when in fact it's not right. Have you ever tried to convince yourself that something was right that you wanted to do and you just knew you shouldn't, but you try to figure out a way to make it right? How about the last time you sat down with your tax person and you're trying to find every single deduction that you can find? And maybe that tax guy is trying to help you and he's trying to encourage you. Oh, what about this and this? And in your mind you're going, well, you know, I'm not sure, but I'd sure like to have that deduction. Man, Satan's got his two-faced mask on. And you don't know which side is the truth. He's trying to tell you the lie. So put on the breastplate of righteousness. Look for what's right first, to counteract the lie that most certainly is on the way. And having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, Satan has another weapon. It's a slip knot, rope, trap. You know the ones I'm talking about. The big chase scene in the jungle. And this guy's chasing that guy. And this guy has already set the trap. And he runs this guy right by the slip knot rope trap. And just as he steps, the slip knot grabs him, pulls him upside down, he's hanging in the jungle. And we're all cheering. Got him. Satan uses that. The story is told of a man who flew to Africa to spend some time and wanted to bring back a present for his children. He decided it'd be great to have a pet monkey. And he had tried so many times to catch a monkey. I mean, he threw something at him, and he tried to lasso him, he did all kinds of things, couldn't catch him. Monkey's pretty smart. And one of the natives in the jungle said, "I'll catch him for you." Took a rope, tied around the top of a mason jar. And in that jar, he put some beautiful things. Little pieces of rock or something. Set it out there in plain sight. Here's the rope. And the native sat over here about 10 or 15 feet away holding the rope. The monkey figured it out. "That looks pretty. I want it." In his head, he's thinking, "I'll run, grab it, I'll be out of here." He ran. He grabbed. And now his hand is too big to come out of the jar. And he's caught. "Wait a minute. Just let go." "Oh, no. I want the stuff." That's what Satan does. That's how he works. He gets us to put our foot in the door. Then he closes the door. And we're trapped with his slip knot rope trap. So God says, protect your feet. The preparation of the gospel of peace. In other words, what causes us grief not to be at peace when we mess up? Aren't you bothered by it? Doesn't it give you grief and sorrow? Are you not at peace? Absolutely not. Toss and turn, I'm upset with myself. He says, therefore, don't put your feet in that path. And you'll be at peace. And Satan's trap won't grab you. Above all, taking the shield of faith, with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. Satan's next resource is bright, shining lights that say, "Come over here." The fiery darts of the wicked one. They're two-faced, as it were. They sound really bad. I don't think I want to be stuck with a flaming arrow. But that's really not what this is. He's talking about what happens or what the effect of Satan's shooting happens to be. It's a little different than that. It's more like, you know that Cupid thing? Shoots the arrow and the people fall in love. That's how it starts out with Satan. "Hey, this is great." Boop. And you go, "Man, this is great." And then all of a sudden, it begins to burn. We went to our trip this summer out west. And at night, we came over the mountain heading into the city of Las Vegas. And boy, those bright, shining lights say, come on! And from out here, man, Las Vegas looks great. Tall buildings and big lights and all kinds of architecture and themed places. And wow, I wanted to go and see all of those. And it's outstanding. It looks so great. And you park your car. And you go to Main Street. And the entire time you're walking down Main Street, there are people who have business cards, stacks of them, and they're walking around like this. They don't look at you. And it's the business card prostitutes, because it's legal. And they're walking around wearing shirts. Woman to your room in 20 minutes or less. When you're coming into the city, you don't see those people. When you're out there on the mountain looking down at Las Vegas, you don't see those people. And you don't see what's behind the windows in that brightly lit city until you get in there amongst them. And Satan says, I'm shooting these arrows that say, come over here, have fun. And his whole purpose is to trap us and tempt us where we are vulnerable and take the helmet of salvation . The devil has another resource, a weapon, and it's a blindfold. The Bible has always presented God as approaching people first through the mind, not through the emotion. You ever thought about that? A lot of religious groups begin with emotion. God doesn't. He begins with truth. He approaches us through the mind. His idea is to learn, be educated, and then your emotions are educated. And you can be emotional about something because you are educated to what it really is. You can have emotion over things that aren't real, and you can feel like they really are real, and it seems like it's a great thing until you figure out, well, that just wasn't what I thought. And so the devil tries to get us to close our minds and feel, because some of his best work is done amongst people who say, boy, that feels good. Remember the song that came out a number of years ago? How can this be wrong when it feels so right? Well, that's backwards. And so God says, put on the helmet of salvation. Think about what is real. Think about salvation. Think about how to be and that you are saved. And don't allow Satan to blindfold your mind. Finally, take the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Satan has a desire to steal the Word right out of your life and mine. in Matthew 13 in describing the sower, that the seed fell on the hard-packed soil. The birds came along and picked it up. Jesus said, that's the evil one taking the word away. That's what Satan wants to do. He's a thief. And he has a crowbar, and he can get whatever he wants. Held a meeting in Corbin, Kentucky, 3 or 4 weeks ago. At the end of the meeting, at night, one of the nights, I went out to my car, about ready to leave, me and the last person, and I locked the keys in the car. I don't think I'd ever done that before. I was just doing it to experience what other people have gone through. So then I got to experience, you call somebody, he has one of these tools, and he unlocks the door. And now I'm thinking, I pay him $35, I could probably buy those tools for $100, lock the keys in 3 times, I got them paid for, and then I might just lock them on purpose to use it, because that's a cool thing that they use. That's what would happen with me. Satan's got one of those tools, man. And he can get anything he wants. He'll steal it right out of my heart. Therefore, God's armor that is designed to take care of that, the sword of the Spirit, before he ever gets in there tight enough to deal with it, you push him away with the word. You know, that's the only offensive piece of weaponry that God ever gave, the Word. Very quickly. The book of Acts is quite interesting. We don't have time to get into all of it, but you go back and look at it sometime. Look, every time there is trouble in the book of Acts, what was right before it? Acts 2 and 3, the preaching of the gospel. Acts 4, the apostles are put in jail. Interesting. Acts 5 and 6 and 7, preaching of the gospel, and Stephen is stoned. Acts 7. The preaching of the gospel following Stephen is followed by Acts 8, the persecution of Saul. Acts 9 and 10, the preaching to the household of Cornelius in chapter 11, and in chapter 12, Herod persecutes the church. In chapter 13, the gospel is beginning to spread. The first missionary groups are forming. At the end of chapter 13, the Jews are stirred up and they're all upset. In chapter 14, the preaching continues. And in chapter 15 and chapter 16, and then they're put in jail in Philippi. Paul is stoned along the way. Every time it seems that Satan attacks is right after the word has been preached. I guess when we sit down to study and when we assemble to study, we better be careful going home. Because it does seem to me that Satan attacks when you least expect it. And it seems to follow when the word has been presented. Because this is what he hates. This is what has told everybody around of his demise. This word is what has told everybody that hell is real and heaven is real. And that you can be in heaven and you don't have to be in hell. And he don't like that. And so when the word is presented, he is often right behind it, doing something with his vast resources. Let us be prepared. Let us wear the armor. Let us be prepared to fight against Satan's resources in our lives. The greatest thing we can do, of course, is to be in the Lord. When I'm a child of God, having been baptized into Jesus Christ. He is in my life. And He works with me, and He helps me, and He gives me strength. And I am strengthened by His Spirit in the inner man. And so tonight, if you're not a child of God, that's the best way to fight the devil. But oddly enough, when I become a child of God is when He steps up His fight. So maybe I've messed up and I need to come back. I want you to get ready tonight, if you need, while we stand and sing.